Welcome to Halacha in a Year, where we can get to learn all the most relevant halacha through the prism of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. You are listening to Rabbi Yaakov Tram. This shiur is kindly sponsored by the Moshe Group and CA in Zuchus of Rivka Bela Bas Nechama Shifra and in honor of Rabbi Tram. Today we're going to be learning the halachas of Eiruvei Chatzeros Part 2, this is Siman Tzadi Dalet in 94 in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Last time we looked at the types of courtyards and common areas that need Eruvin, and we looked at how to make an Eruv. This time we're going to be looking at three more concepts, and they are who needs to be part of the Eruv, non-Jews living in the shared space, and the Eruv in our cities. Let's take a look at the first idea. The idea is who needs to be part of the Eruv. The background idea is that if you have a group of Jews who are living with a shared space, they're in a shared space, every Jew who is part of that shared space needs to contribute to that Eruv, needs to give their rights, their designation of their living quarters to be part of that shared space. And if they don't, they make it osur on other people. Meaning to say, if there's three Jews who share a common shared courtyard, and two of them make an Eruv, but the third one decides not to contribute because he has rights of access, therefore he will now prohibit the other two from making an Eruv. It needs to be inclusive of all the Jews who are in that shared space. Let's look at four basic questions here. What determines a person's halachic residence for the purpose of Eruv? So, meaning to say, is it your eating or is it your sleeping? So the halacha is, if a person eats in one place and sleeps in another, the place where a person eats is considered their halachic residence regarding the laws of Eruv. So he can, therefore, he only causes a prohibition on others if he eats his own food in a special room in this area, let's say in his room or his apartment, but the place of sleep does not create a prohibition. So if he's sleeping across the street in a separate apartment building, and he eats in this apartment building because he has a room here where he eats, that room where he eats is where he's going to have the rights and therefore makes a prohibit for others unless he is part of the Eruv. Does a temporary guest in a courtyard prohibit others from carrying if no Eruv is made? So in this case, according to some halachic authorities, if a guest stays in a house only for less than 30 days, he does not prohibit others from carrying, even if he has his own room, provided that there is at least one other permanent resident in the courtyard, even if that person happens to be a non-Jew. Meaning, therefore, the guest, in a certain sense, is considered a non-entity when it comes to an Eruv and does not need to contribute towards the Eruv if he's only there for less than 30 days. What if all the people in the courtyard or in this apartment building are guests? In that case, there, if it's a guest house and everybody's a guest, then if they're eating and if they have their own eating quarters in their rooms or in their quarters, then they do prohibit one another because it's not like there's one person is the owner and the other people are the residents. Everybody's considered a guest in this case. Everybody's a guest and therefore they will make prohibited on one another. Is this opinion accepted by all? The answer is no. Some halachic authorities are more machmir, they are more stringent, and that is that a guest is considered like a tenant if he has a special room where he eats, and therefore, a priori, it is best to follow the stricter view and make sure that everybody, including guests, are included in the Eruv. But it should be made without a bracha because not everybody agrees to this. And if the Eruv was not made, one may be lenient and rely on not having to have this guest make asar on other people, make it on other people. We move to our next topic, and that is non-Jews living in a shared space. This is very common. In an apartment building, you'll have X amount of Jews, and you have Y amount of non-Jews. How do we treat the non-Jews when it comes to the Eruv? So obviously a non-Jew can carry on Shabbos because they do not have the prohibition of Shabbos or Hoitzah on Shabbos. But how does that relate to Eruv? So the halacha is if one Jew lives in this courtyard and there's a let's say a non-Jew or a bunch of non-Jews, that does not prohibit the Jew from carrying because there's no need for an Eruv. Similarly, if you have two Jews who live there, but they do not need an Eruv, then the non-Jew does not prohibit the Eruv being made. However, in the most common case, which is you have two or more Jews live there, and they do need an Eruv in their shared space, and there are non-Jews there, then the non-Jew has the rights to prohibit the Jew from carrying there. And the only way to really resolve this is to rent the premises from there. Meaning, the non-Jew also has rights in the shared courtyard. In our case, in the apartment buildings, hallways, and lobby, they have rights of access. You need to rent the rights of access from them for their shared part of that lobby. When is this rental done? It must be done before the Eruv is made. So first you get the rights, you rent the rights, and then you make the Eruv. What if the non-Jew lives in an adjoining courtyard or an attic but shares an exit with the Jews? So in this case, it's like somebody living in the inside courtyard and he would prohibit the Jews from carrying because he has the rights of access through that courtyard, through that hallway, through that lobby. What if a Jew rents or lends property to a non-Jew in the courtyard? So, if the non-Jew does not, in this case, have the capacity to prohibit the Jews from carrying, even if the Jewish owner does not live there, since the property was not given to the non-Jew with the rights to prohibit carrying on the Jews, because the owner, the landlord, is Jewish and he only gives rights for the non-Jew to live there, but not to use his rights of rental to prevent other Jews from living there. So therefore, that person, that non-Jew, would not to be needed to rent it from. The Vilna Gaon does put an addendum to this and says that this is provided that in fact the Jew who is the landlord has the rights to evict their tenants at any point in time, which is not always so simple, depending on law of the particular locale. How does one rent the premises from the non-Jew for the Eruv purposes? So the Jew first says explicitly, rent me your premises for such and such an amount. He does not need to explain the purpose, although it's obviously makes him a lot more sense if he does. But if he just says, give me permission, and it's just to carry, that is not valid. Giving permission is not sufficient. How much money can it be? So give me a small amount of money. So a person can go over and give $5 and say to the non-Jew, I'd like to write by the rights of access in the hallways. It's not going to be that I'm going to make an encampment. I'm not going to do anything. I just want to have the rights to carry. That's sufficient. What happens if there was no money transfer, but just a legal document? The legal document works as well. Very important question. From whom may one rent the premises? So if one rented it from the non-Jew or even their wife or servant, that's sufficient as well. This is very helpful because you can now deputize people. This happens a lot of times when let's say a group of Jews are going to a hotel and it's Shabbos and the hotel is not circumscribed by an Eruv, but inside you want to carry in the hallways. And the lobby. In that case, speaking to the manager and renting rights from the manager, even though the manager does not own the hotel, is sufficient to be able to create that Eruv. What happens if the rental agreement is open-ended or expires? So if no time is specified in how long the rental arrangement, then it's fine. It remains as long as the non-Jew does not revoke it. If a new non-Jew moves in, a new rental is needed from the new non-Jew. If the agreement has a time limit and the non-Jew subleases, it's still valid because it's still within that time limit. If the non-Jew dies or sells to another non-Jew, a new rental is required. If it's rented from a servant without a time limit, it's only valid when that servant or that manager or that person who's there is actually there. And if it has a time limit, it's valid even if the servant leaves because then it was meant for a time limit as well. If the rental does expire, must a new Eruv be made? And the answer is yes, because the Eruv does not renew by itself. If a new rental is needed, a new Eruv is needed as well. What happens if it's impossible to rent from the non-Jew? So then in that case, sometimes it's just not possible. The Jew may ask to the non-Jew to lend them space to place an object of significance in the non-Jewish apartment. This gives them the rights in the non-Jew's apartment, and that this will allow then the Jew can then rent the premises on behalf of the residents because of the item that they're allowing to be stay in the non-Jewish premises. What is the status of a apostate, a Jew who converted or left Judaism, or a person who publicly desecrates Shabbos? So they're treated like non-Jews. You must rent the space from them as well. Some say even if they are transgressors of rabbinic violations. We move to our third and last concept, and that is an Eruv in cities. This is where most people call an Eruv. How do communities, the Eruv of big communities and cities work? So the first thing is that they need to be circumscribed. That means there needs to be a fence around the neighborhood. And if that's not possible, you put up a what's called Tzuras HaPesach, where it's essentially door frame. So there's poles with the strings on top are essentially framing a door frame, because then it's usually using fences along, let's say, the railway tracks or other areas, which actually is a fence around the edges of the Eruv. And then it also uses various slopes of hills, depending on the grade. And these Tzuras HaPesach put together creates a circumscribed area. That's the first thing. That is not the Eruv. Those are called the walls or the doorways. The Eruv is then on top of the Eruv is what mixes and gives the shared rights. That means that all the Jews in that neighborhood needed contributing towards a shared meal, which is usually kept in the shul, and it must be done by a qualified rav, because they need to check that, first of all, are in fact the barriers in fact a good circumscribing of the neighborhood, and number two, is this done correctly? Obviously, it doesn't have to be that every single Jew goes and participates by sending in their 5 cents, but when the Eruv is done, the person doing the Eruv does it on behalf of all those people, and therefore is mezakeh, gives them the rights to that shared meal, which means to say that the streets now are shared space. How do they rent rights from all the non-Jews? Because there's many non-Jews in the neighborhood. So they do it usually by speaking to a mayor or a city official and asking for the rights of rental for the streets for this to work as well. So there's many steps necessary for a public, what we call an Eruv. Can the Eruv always be placed in the shul? So it can only be placed in the shul in the case where it's a large Eruv HaChatzeros for the entire city. But if it's for a courtyard, the Eruv must be placed in a private dwelling, not a shul. What happens if the citywide Eruv becomes defective on Shabbos? This sometimes happens. There's storms, there's snow, there's all kinds of things. So if it's a fully enclosed courtyard, let's say an apartment building, did not make an Eruv Chatzeros because there's an Eruv in the city, and the Eruv falls down the city, then in this situation, the Eruv that was used for the larger city, which is, let's say, kept in the shul, is going to be sufficient to allow people to carry in the hallways of that building, even though it's not on premises for the rest of the Shabbos in this case, until it's fixed. Can it be fixed on Shabbos? The answer is because of the risk of confusion. If possible, a non-Jew may be asked to repair the Eruv on Shabbos, but it's best for him to do things in a way that's not violating D'oraisa. So, for instance, to make if the string broke, for them to simply loop the string rather than to tie it in a double knot. Does an Eruv help on Yom Tov? The answer is yes, because in Yom Tov, you're not allowed to just carry. On Yom Tov, you're only allowed to carry letzorech, for the need of Yom Tov. You're not allowed to necessarily, let's say, if you don't have an Eruv, you can't carry your siddur back from shul on Yom Tov. You can't carry things which are unnecessary on Yom Tov. The Eruv makes it that you can carry in any circumstance on Yom Tov. What happens if Yom Tov falls on Friday and the Eruv breaks on Yom Tov? So even though you can still carry on Yom Tov letzorech for the needs of Yom Tov, that does not help you once Shabbos comes in. And even though the Eruv started when Yom Tov came in, by the time Shabbos comes in, it's a new Kedusha, it's a new level of sanctity, and the one cannot carry at all on that Shabbos, if that's the permutation, unless it is fixed. With this, we conclude the topic of Eruv HaChatzeros, which obviously is a topic which has a lot of depth and meaning to this. A lot of research needs to be done for this to be work for a community, and obviously a lot of funds are necessary to make these things a reality. Have a wonderful and meaningful